Welcome to the Native Habitat Podcast. If you've even got the slightest interest in the outdoors, you're in the right place. We're your hosts, Kyle Leiberger
and Jake Brown. Get ready to hit the field with folks like us who have a passion for wildlife, plants, and native habitat.
So, all right, y'all, we're back with another episode of Native Habitat Podcast, and we've got Ben Kirkland here with us today from, I found your Instagram page, Appalachian Bonsai, and man, I just found it super fascinating. I think we've even mentioned it in past podcasts how, I guess we saw a Boynton Oak. There's Boynton Milkwort. That's what I was confusing with.
Yeah, Boynton's Oak.
Boynton's Oak, and it's like a tiny post oak. And I was like, wow, it's like a little bonsai post oak. And I was like, well, you know, I wonder if you can make bonsais out of out of trees like that, because they're already adapted to growing on dry glades and I don't know, they're just short growing. They look like a mix between a normal tree and a bonsai. But I guess. So tell us a little bit about what you do exactly, your background, and then I guess we'll get into what bonsai actually is, because a lot of people, I think, are don't actually know what bonsai is, and they think it's a specific tree.
You're right. There's a lot of people that to think that. Well, introduction, my name is Ben Kirkland. I'm an adjunct instructor at Virginia Tech, and my background is in industrial design. But I've been a tree lover since I was a kid. I've always been in the outdoors, and my dad was a Marine, so we bounced around the Southeast all our lives. But he went to Japan when I was a kid, and he was always sending back photographs of Japanese gardens and bonsai. And anyway, he gave me one, like one of the ones you can pick up like at a mall or a kiosk or something, when I was in just before middle school. I killed it, right? Because you don't know anything about how to care for a plant at, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old. But anyway, after I got done with school, I moved here to Virginia to help out some family, and my interest in that started peaking again. So I picked up some books, I looked online, did the best I could. And because I couldn't afford anything, I started digging up trees, you know, out of my backyard, because I live in the mountains of southwestern Virginia. And turns out we got a lot of good species in our backyards to create bonsai with. And the cool thing about it, and we can talk more about it here in a second, but one of the cool things about using our native flora is that it's adapted to our climates. You know, you can't take a tropical tree and bring it to Maine.
Yeah.
You can't take a tree from Maine and bring it down to Florida. And so our trees are naturally adapted to your backyard. And then when people see it, they're like, whoa, that's, I thought it was a special tree, just as has been mentioned. I didn't know you could do a Eastern white pine in the bonsai, you know?
Yeah. Well, would Ben, take a little bit to give like the history of bonsai, where it comes from and what it is.
Sure. Well, bonsai has been around for about 2000 years. It started off in China. And then just like with a lot of things, you know, culture, writing, Buddhism, all sorts of influences from China went into Japan, and the Japanese really refined it in a way that we understand it now. The Chinese term for it is pensai, and the Japanese version is bonsai, and we all know it as bonsai. It basically means a tree in a pot, but that's just a word translation. It doesn't give the essence of what the tree is or what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to look like a tree that has grown, survived, is rugged, old, withstood the test of time, and gives it gives meaning to, you know, to the tree's life, to your own life. It gives you perspective about what's around you. You look at it and you can feel it. Now, it's got some human aesthetic in it, but there's so much nature inherent into the tree itself that there's a quality that it's not just a little seedling in a, you know, tulip bulb tray. It's there's a whole package that comes along with it.
Yeah. I think I already know the answer to this, but you can see kind of what bonsai is doing. I guess bonsai is you're able to be creative with it, but you can get that kind of same effect in the wild and nature in certain places, can't you? Because I know we're on a lot of glades and rocky areas, and these places are dry. So, sorry, we got chickens in our podcast studio.
That's all right. That's okay.
But this is Blackberry. This is my daughter's favorite chicken. So if I am mean to her, she'll kill me. But so we're on anyways. I'm super ADD. I don't need animals walking around the podcast studio. Let me handle her real quick. If we can get her out. That's gonna.
Sure. Sorry.
Oh, you got her, Jake.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Anyways, back to the podcast. So we're like on glades a bunch, and just yesterday we were on several places where we're seeing like post oaks and blackjack oaks and even things like different viburnums and blueberries and hawthorns. We even saw some like crab apples and a lot of pines. That shortleaf pine we saw 2 days ago was in a was on like a barren. And there was a chinkapin oak next to it. And all these trees I'm mentioning were all like stunted to where when you look at them, you can kind of tell, wow, that tree is old, but it's just probably really slow growing. And it, I guess, creates that same look bonsai does, right?
Yeah, and very exposed to the conditions. It looks like a tree that has had a rough life, always, you know, been, there's nothing out in these thin soil areas that protects it from the wind. You don't have the other trees next to it. It just seems like it's kind of a standalone out there, and that same gnarly look.
Yeah, but they're beautiful the way
yeah,
they look.
Yeah.
Let me get rid of
that. They've got character.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, y'all get shaking you
yeah,
guys.
Sorry.
Sorry about that. I don't think anybody else who does podcasts has to deal with chickens getting in their podcast.
No, you are fine.
So, but yeah, where were we at, Jake? Were you?
I think what we were kind of headed toward was Ben kind of alluded to it earlier, how the bonsai, you're trying to recreate these gnarly looking trees that have character, that kind of give the look of a long life that's been weathered. And so anyway, you just kind of take off from there.
And sure, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you could talk a little bit about kind of the creativity behind it too, I think that'd be a cool thing to hear about and add into that kind of topic.
Absolutely. The character is a big part of it, right? Just like you and me, we've got scars and we've got stories to tell. We're telling stories right now. You know, when you have a kind of a fulfilled life, you're a pretty interesting dude. Same thing with your tree. Your tree gets beat up out in nature. We just kind of induce the same process into our trees at home. It has limited capacity to move its roots, right? We keep it in a shallow pot, a very small, shallow pot. So it doesn't have room to put out a bunch of roots. We prune it, and then, you know, bugs, lightning, storms, whatever is going to prune a tree. And so that adds a little bit of character. We're going to call it, quote, soil mixture. It's not really soil. It's just a mixture of stuff. It's mostly inorganic. And it limits the amount of nutrients that it collects. It limits the amount of water that it collects. So we're essentially creating the same thing as a glade or an alpine or subalpine environment for these things. We're not killing it. You know, it is stressed to some degree. That's what makes it smaller. But our plants are... You know, our plant's health is our highest priority. I don't care if I can cuss in this podcast, but this plant can grow pretty wild and ragged. I would rather it do that than die. So I'm going to make sure my plant's health is you know, taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's sort of poetic in a way. Just the struggle. That's where the attractiveness of these trees comes from. And you mentioned pruning. We saw a great case of that yesterday. On these glades because of fire had came through, and it hadn't had fire in a while, on all those grasses in the understory produced heat, and it pruned those trees to where, you know, now those, a lot of the lower limbs were kind of toasted a little bit. So it's gonna be interesting to see what those trees do after this fire. Some of them even got so hot I think they might not make it, but
yeah,
I think we're going to be surprised to see if they come back or not, because I feel like you know, they've been
resilient. Yeah, those particular plants have been resilient for a long time. So it'll be interesting, like you said, to see what comes of them.
Yeah. So I guess when you think of your classic like bonsai tree, it's a lot of conifer stuff, isn't it?
And so, conifers and maples are usually the ones that people most associate with bonsai.
But are those your main focus with Appalachian species, or are you using other things as well?
I use a lot of things. My favorite here is the American hornbeams, or Carpinus caroliniana. It's a really hardy species. It can tolerate overwatering, which a lot of new people end up overwatering or underwatering their trees. So it's tolerant to that. It's tolerant to pruning, heavy pruning, yearly pruning, even of the roots, which we do root prune as much as we do prune the top. And we have to change out the soil every now and again, or it degrades to a point where the health fails. It's got a lovely color, a lovely leaf. It's got a beautiful trunk to it. They're my favorites.
They're flowers, too. They have really nice looking flowers. I saw one 2 days ago while we were riding around a property, and we went by so fast I didn't get a chance to point it out to Jake, but they have really cool looking flowers. And I think those go by musclewood, too. I think a lot of people call them musclewood, right?
Yep. And musclewood, ironwood, antlerwood.
Yeah.
They're just big, muscly looking trees.
Yeah, so I'm sure that – does that – does that same look they have just growing out in the wild cross over into when you're, bonsaiing? I guess, what is the word for them, bonsaiing?
Yeah, just the bonsai process, designing, styling the tree. The traditional Japanese way of doing things is usually with a lot of triangles, obtuse triangles. Mm-hmm. It's very pleasing, and it's part of the aesthetic of Japanese and Chinese, and even to a degree, Korean culture. Those are all part of it. And many people still do that type of practice. But you might see in Japan or Chinese or in a traditional bonsai, you might see a maple that's created to look like a pine with these triangle shapes, or even like a spruce. But our maples don't do that. They have a nice rounded top to them.
Wow.
So there's a strong push to create a more naturalistic style. Arthur Jura, he's the curator of the bonsai collection at the Arboretum of North Carolina. The North Carolina Arboretum is how you pronounce that correctly. But he has been pushing this naturalistic style of rounded crowns. For here in the eastern U.S., it's pretty humid, so we get a lot of rot, whereas the really nice, dry, white, bone white conifers you see, those are more out west. Mm-hmm. He's trying to keep it close to home. I think that those are good species to use. There are plenty more. And even in the styling of those trees, we try to get a little bit closer to what's in our backyards.
Yeah, and I don't even think people pay attention to the structure of trees in their own backyard, because that's something really unique. We talked about that a lot in forestry school, because those structures play a lot into how they, to the succession of a forest and what their role is. Are they coming up through the canopy? Are they tall and slender? Are they like oak species that are sprawling out? And sweet gums, that's why sweet gums are so good at just getting up out of a forest and maturing and becoming a dominant species if they wanted to, because they have like a narrow crown, closer to that of a pine. And I guess that's I hadn't even thought about that playing into bonsai, but when you change that up, I guess that really is what draws people's eyes and attention to it, and say that's something different. And so tell us a little bit about where you're keeping these trees, how long it takes to for them to get certain sizes, and how often you have to change pots and things like that.
Yeah, and also I don't mean to kind of cut that off, but to go along with it, when you go out looking for a tree to start, do you start with an existing tree and use it, maybe transplant it, or do you try to start from seed and then
a much better place to start, I think.
Well, yeah, then lead into Kyle's questions, I guess.
Sure. Well, you can start all of those methods. Propagating bonsai is always a fun subject. Yeah, within our conversations, seeds are a great way to start. Maples are easy to start from seed. But I like collecting the trees and then working on them. you need to obviously have permission. I don't do it on any private property or steel trees because that just creates a really poor environment for other people to come in and enjoy their backyards or their neighbor's yards or public land. You have to have permissions. Whenever you collect from the wild, it's called Yamadori in Japan. It's just a collected tree. And what I'm looking for in those particular types of trees is something with a little character to it. You know, we were talking about the root base of a hornbeam's got a nice flare. It flares out. And that's pretty. Some pretty root systems. I've got an eastern white pine that was in a cow field, neighbor's cow field, and it'd been trampled and beat up and in a way naturally been broken down and twisted. It's actually got some twists in the trunk and in the branches. That had a lot of character to it. So that's attractive to me. And if you're growing it from seed, you can, you know, train it to have more character by letting it grow really, really tall, and then you cut it short, and you let it grow up again and get really short and let it grow up a little bit more and cut it short. And in doing so, you create the taper from the flared base of a tree up to a much more fine point, and that goes out to the branches too, a thicker, usually thicker bottom branches, up to thinner branches, more ramified branches at the tips and top.
Yeah.
How old are these trees when you're digging them up?
It varies. You know, maple can grow pretty fast in a field as long as it's got good soil. So you might have a tree that's, you know, 2 inches in diameter in a matter of 5-6 years. If you're doing it straight in a shallow pot, you're already limiting how quick it can grow. You can keep one, you know, a quarter of an inch thick in a shallow pot for a very, very long time. So it's depending on whether you got a big pot, a big field, or a really small pot and poor soil.
You can see the appeal with starting with an existing tree that's already got some growth on it.
Yeah, yeah. It makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
With that, you let them grow out and shrink them back. Let them grow out, shrink it back. And it helps to know the type of tree or species that you're using. Like a pine doesn't always bud back unless you've got a short leaf or a pitch pine. Those can put out those advantageous buds from old wood. Mm-hmm. Whereas you get like a white pine, Pinus strobus, those don't bud back very easily. They're a little trickier, but they're beautiful. Maples are another good one. Hornbeam buds back really easily. Hawthorns do it. Viburnum does it. Viburnum's a tricky species, but if you chase it back hard enough, it'll work.
Can those species, like viburnum, is one of my favorite native shrubs. I love the blooms on those. How does that affect the blooming when you've done all this manipulation to it? Does it ever get to a point where it has healthy blooms fairly, you know, yearly?
100%. That also goes into the age of the tree. If you take a cutting, you can always take a cutting and then propagate that, and then you know that that's going to produce a bloom. You do need to make sure you've got a little bit more of the phosphorus and potassium in there to cause it to bloom more. Most of my stuff is a balanced fertilizer, but if you add a little bit more of your phosphorus in there, it's going to put out bigger blooms.
So you're using an inorganic soil, like some sort of inorganic medium, and then you're adding the water and your fertilizer to that. How do you add your fertilizer? Is it a granular liquid? How does that work?
Mine's liquid. Mm-hmm. I've got some that's liquid and I've got some that's granular. I have used Miracle-Gro because I've got a lot of trees. I've got 50, 60 trees. And using an organic fertilizer can be pretty expensive for something like that. If you use like Neptune's fish fertilizer, it's great stuff. It's going to leave a little bit of an algae scum on the top of my tree. And the soil doesn't, you know, soil's part of the aesthetic too. Mm-hmm. So I avoid it, and I'm not eating my tree. So I'm okay with it not being organic per se. But I also use like a liquid fertilizer sometimes, and I mix it in a 2-gallon can. Once every 2 weeks, I'm fertilizing my trees. For the junipers, for my pines, I use Mir acid, which is also Miracle-Gro, because they prefer a more acidic soil as opposed to something that's more alkaline. Oak is the same thing. Quercus species, kind of like that. Poor soil. It's often very acidic because they're pretty tannic species to begin with. And Mir acid goes pretty well with them too.
Is the soil a fairly coarse grain, like Would it be like anything from a sand to like a gravel? How would you describe the soil?
Sure.
In the pots.
We keep it coarse. I don't go any larger than about a 3/16 quarter of an inch. I've got screens that screen my mixes with, and I don't go any smaller than a 1/16 of an inch. So Mason sand, coarse sand, mm-hmm. you know, that works well. I use turfus. So that's usually on like baseball fields or mm-hmm. used to aerate soils. There's one that's kind of clay like and breaks up easily in your fingers, but there's one that's pretty hard. That works nice. I've used chicken grit. Hmm. Chicken grit works well, except it's heavy because it's granite, or at least in our area, chicken grit's made from granite. That gets pretty heavy, especially in larger specimens. I like Safety Zorb, which is an oil absorbent you can get at Tractor Supply. And I've used Napa's oil spill stuff, you know, it's diatomaceous earth. But it's a large, chunky one that's made for oil absorbing. So that's Napa number 8822, if anybody's looking into it.
Wow, there's some flexibility there with that then, sounds
yeah.
like.
Yeah. So you're going to
also do like pine bark goes in my soil mixes too. Oh, so okay. It's got organic media in there.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, you'd never think you'd have to go to a parts store to grow bonsai. Yeah. But it's just like a whole new world. And it's weird how a lot of the information, you've acquired from bonsai translates to what we've acquired through just managing properties in different landscapes. And like, I know Jake, we were just yesterday, we were on a property and we were looking at the epicormic branches of a short leaf. And I, even though I knew that, I've never thought about it being a good tree for bonsai. So that's extremely interesting. But where is your setup? Are you keeping these plants outside all year long, or how are you handling that?
My trees are temperate zone. I think I'm 6A, maybe 6B, as far as my zoning is concerned. And they are outside all the time. They require all four seasons. So they're out in my backyard. Mm-hmm. They're on benches, so they have easy access for me watering and checking for spider mites or other problems. They get lots of sunshine in the morning. They get it really good in the morning. At about 1-2 o'clock, I've got a silver maple, a monster silver maple, provides shade for those hottest times of the day, and then it gets evening sun too. So about 5 o'clock through sundown, it gets the western sun. And then in the wintertime, whenever I get to take a break from them, I put them directly on top of a tarp, and then I just kind of heal them in with mulch just to keep them damp and keep the temperatures from fluctuating too much.
Yeah, that's all. It's just crazy. The amount of work I guess y'all are putting into these. And are you doing this as a hobby, or do you ever sell your trees, or is this just all? Is this to you?
I guess? It started off as a hobby, and then I started doing bonsai videos on YouTube about how I collect, because there wasn't much information 6 years ago when I started doing it. And those videos became pretty popular on YouTube. And so I've put out a lot more. It's slowed down because teaching has taken a lot of time away from video making. But I'm still trying to get them out every now and again. I thought about selling them more, and I might get rid of a lot of the non-native species that I have and focus on all natives.
That's what I like to hear.
Because they're more enjoyable. Yeah.
that's something I would do too. So.
Yeah. It seems like I would get attached to these things. You know, you spend this much time with them. It's kind of an intimate process. Like, you know, I don't know. It'd be hard for me to sell them.
Yeah. I've never sold a tree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so now, when you mentioned YouTube, I didn't even realize you YouTubed, but I feel like I've seen some of your videos before. Now that you say that, I probably have, and didn't even know it. So that's kind of
It's funny how that works.
Yeah, that's odd. But all right, my next question: so, how many different species do you have there that you're growing currently?
I think I've got about 10 species. 10 species of natives, and then in several non-natives, because you just ultimately end up collecting them from other bonsai people. I'm part of a club in Roanoke. I'm south of Roanoke. If that gives you an idea of, you know, my environment. But I got Eastern White Pines. That's a fun pine to play with. We don't have as many pitch pine here, though I would love to play with them for the same reason that you two are exclaiming about the shortleaf pine. It spuds back on old wood. I've got a shortleaf pine back here, but I haven't propagated it yet. Time gets away from me. Mm-hmm. American hornbeam. I've got dogwood. That's probably my best video on the YouTube channel. I don't know why, but it's a Cornus florida, you know, flowering dogwood. It's gorgeous. I've got Black Haw viburnum, which is, you know, a really good species. It's a little bit more, I say, intermediate to advanced, but it's got such a pretty bark to it. Mm-hmm. It's that little popcorn type bark.
And the leaves are real glossy. They're one of my favorite trees. We've seen a bunch this week on different properties, but that's such a cool tree. I interrupted you, I think.
No, you're fine.
Was that all of them?
Yeah, they're a great tree. I've got Crataegus species, so those are, you know, hawthorns. I've got Crataegus varietus, which is a green hawthorn, and then a Crux Golly. I think that's, I'm saying it right. It's cockspur, and it's got 2-inch heinous thorns on it. But I got a 4-foot specimen in my backyard that's just fantastic.
Wow. Yeah, those hawthorns are awesome. We saw some this year that were just blooming. Like, the blooms on them are just incredible.
Yeah.
And this is growing on a glade. If I was doing bonsai, I have a bad, like, collector's mentality, so I'd, like, want to have everything. But have you ever tried any, like, the viburnum, not viburnums, the vacciniums, just, like, the blueberries, like, sparkleberry or farkleberry?
I've got one that I was able to get this year, and I haven't touched it. My friend and I collected several viburnum and some of these, they're almost like a huckleberry specimen. Put them in a ground, just to, you know, we didn't have time to really put them into bonsai media, the soil media. Collected them again this year, so it's been 2 years, and I've got them in a pot, and I'm just letting them grow, let them recover, let's see what happens. But people do create bonsai out of them.
Yeah, are people using like smaller shrubs a lot, or is it mostly trees and larger shrubs?
Some trees and some shrubs are better than others. So it's really your choice. The Arboretum, North Carolina Arboretum, has a lot of natives from our southern Appalachians. You know, like a rhododendron, we got a lot of rhododendron here in Virginia. I know there's definitely there in Northeast Alabama. Mm-hmm. Rhododendron Festival up in Mentone's fun.
Oh, yeah.
But those have really large leaves. You know, they can, they're almost like the size of a sweet magnolia. It's really big. Those don't reduce very well. Like, you reduce the nutrients, the water, give it, stress it enough, it'll reduce leaf. But that's a specimen that is not going to create a very nice proportional scaled, you know, illusion of a ancient tree. It's going to look out of proportion. So that's why people usually opt for something like an azalea to try to get the same look, but it's not going to be the same species. Like a Japanese and European beech tree is really nice, but Fagus grandifolia, which is our native American beech, it's grandifolia, grand foliage. It's got really big leaves, and they don't reduce very well. So you have to have a really big tree to make those large leaves look in proportion. So I would say you're welcome to bonsai, and you can pretty much bonsai anything. Just some species are going to be better than others.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess it's a good thing that we're familiar with glades, because it sounds like a lot of those glade species transfer over to bonsai really well.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen shrubby St. John's wort?
No, I don't think I have.
I feel like that would be a good one.
Yeah, smaller.
I'm sure somebody has done it, but it's got that, like, rough looking bark. It seems like it's faster growing too, but it has that real, when they get old enough, they have that real, like, just crazy looking structure and flaky bark. It's really cool, and I feel like that might be a good one. But that Boynton's oak, that would be so cool to see. I'm sure nobody's ever done that. It only grows in, I think, so there's 16 populations in Alabama. Well, 17, because I came across a population in St. Clair County last year, and then there's like one population in Texas, so it's like really uncommon. But I'm sure nobody's ever bonsaied that one. Yeah. But it's already so small.
The leaves are relatively small compared to other oaks too.
Yeah. I think you could just plant it and it would just bonsai itself. So that's what it looks like on Glades, anyways. Yeah. But.
Well, let me give this piece of advice. Your listeners, anybody out there wants to look into collecting trees, you know, do some research, find out what type of tree it is, so that way you know how to take care of it and what to expect in its growth patterns. But something critical that some people don't think about is the timing of the year in which to collect a tree. If you collect it right now, it's going to be too hot. You know, they're already getting through, maybe they're finishing either their first flush or just starting their second flush of leaves for a lot of trees. And it's not a good time to dig them up out of the ground. Springtime is a good one. So here in my part of the country, I'm looking at late February through early April is about my timing to collect them. That can be for hard pruning of the roots, hard pruning of the branches or the trunk. Some people do collect in the fall time too, so looking September, October. And then because roots do a lot of growing through the autumn and in early winter, they will often recover enough so that spring push comes. All the nutrition just pushes up into the trunk and explodes.
It's good to know.
Yeah. That's I'm sure a lot of listeners now are considering trying it, and it takes a lot of dedication, it sounds like, and the right person and mentality to be able to take care of these things, especially for how old are some of your oldest trees?
I've got some of the first trees I collected for my YouTube channel are 6 years old. I started it in 2016, so that's also Appalachian Bonsai. If you want to find out more about collecting trees and the process of that, at least in my backyard, that's where a lot of people have learned how to collect them. And they're still the ones that are people like, throw up more collection videos. I got enough trees.
Yeah.
I think that, collecting a tree, getting it into a pot. I think I forgot part of the question here.
Don't ask me what my question was, because I've already forgot. But no, you're good. I was asking you about your oldest tree. Yeah, it takes a lot of dedication, I guess, to keep a tree that
oldest
long.
Tree. Yeah, you said oldest tree. The oldest tree I've got my first bonsai. It was a garden juniper. Picked it up at Lowe's and didn't kill that one. You'll end up killing a lot of trees. Mm-hmm. So that one is 16, 17 years old. I've been doing this since 2006, 2007. Yeah.
Wow.
15 years old. And then I've got a tree that's 60 years old in a pot that was given to me. It's a Trident maple.
Wow.
Which comes from like Taiwan, Southern Japan, Okinawa. That was given to me from a lady who can't take care of her trees anymore. And so I'm now the guardian of that one. That's very nice.
Does that one spend all four seasons outdoors? Or
all four seasons.
Really?
That's right.
Wow.
An early bloomer. So if I get a frost or a freeze in like March, April, and it's starting to leaf out, there's a chance that the trunk will also freeze and explode. Yeah.
And how often are those getting repotted?
Every year for some species. Like I have an invasive honeysuckle, which is the shrub type, not the vine type. It's an amur honeysuckle. I think it comes from Pakistan. That one has to get done every year. It's a lot like a willow. A willow will just like fill a pot with roots. Very hardy. But I've got pines and junipers that can go 2 to 3 years before a repot. That's not bad. My average is about every 2 years.
Huh. Did you mention using Eastern Red Cedar, any of the native junipers?
Yeah. You can. They're kind of a pain.
Really? Yeah.
The reason being is that they have very coarse foliage. Junipers got two types of foliage. One is what's called a needle type, sometimes called juvenile foliage. And then you have the scale type or mature foliage. So if you look at a Eastern Red Cedar, which is a juniper species, right? Juniper is for Virginiana. You'll notice that some of it are really pointy and sharp, and some of it be really smooth and soft. when you stress a Eastern red cedar, it's going to put out that sharp foliage. And it can take a while to get it to go back to being scale foliage.
Are people...
I've got one.
What about hemlock? Is that one that...
Yeah.
I guess
hemlock's good. It's a slow grower. Yeah. You better start now. if you want to see that thing get older. Carolina hemlock and the Canadian hemlock, both of those are used in bonsai.
Yeah, that's neat.
I feel like we're just throwing tree species at you, but
well, that's why I got them on here.
Yeah, I do have. What about crab apple? Southern crab apple.
100%.
Yeah, we've seen some of those.
Ask me about fruit. People ask me about fruit species. Is that doesn't put out smaller fruit? And the answer is no. So if you have a crab apple, or I've got hawthorns, or you can use a real apple, a pear,
plums.
Plums, in any of these species, you can create bonsai, but they will have the same size flowers and have the same size fruit. So you could have what's called a mame. They're like different heights up to like imperials, which are 4 feet. But you can have these little shorty, you know, 2 or 3 inch tall bonsai trees with a full size apple.
No way. You know? That's insane.
Yeah, it's a strange thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
That makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
To think that it can produce a fruit almost bigger than its actual size, the actual size of the tree. That's insane.
Man.
Like, where does it get that in? Like, I guess the roots.
It's just a function of the root ball, I guess.
Wow.
That's wild.
Yeah, that'd be one expensive apple.
Yeah. That's right.
But
I want to show y'all something. I know that the viewers aren't going to see it, but maybe we can talk about it. Is I got, you know, like an eastern white pine. So this is a Pinus, what is that? Strobus.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it's got, like a 4-inch long needle. You can see that candle is also about 4 inches long. And this is one I collected, and you can see the difference about limiting the nutrients.
No,
soil. And you can even see the candles. Are much shorter than what this one is, and it gets full sun, and it gets fertilized once a week.
It's incredible.
Wow, that is really neat.
At that scale, it almost looks like a longleaf pine. The way that's really cool.
Yeah, it does look like a tiny longleaf pine.
Another thing that plays into this is genetics, and this is another eastern white pine. It had a little problem during the wintertime, but you can see there. It's got even half the size of the roots. So it got a little chloritic. It's a little yellow.
Uh-huh.
But the candles are coming out much greener.
And that one really looks like a longleaf pine. Yeah. That's really neat, cool. Man.
It looks like
both of these are collected here in Virginia, you know, right down the road from me.
Wow.
I saw that string coming down from it, and I was like, for a second, I was like, does he have a rope swing on that thing? like a tiny little rope swing?
I've seen those.
Do people do that?
You get into this, you'll see, like, the Chinese and Taiwanese will put these little mud human beings or little boats or little animals on top of the soil to give a sense of scale. And here in the Appalachians, we have a local expo, and we get to see our trees, all of our natives and non-natives, but our local practitioners of this hobby. And some people will make their own little mud bin, or they'll put a swing in there, or if it's Halloween, they might have like Halloween decorations or a treehouse. I've seen a treehouse built onto a bonsai tree. You
know? Or here in the South, we get like a miniature possum.
We got possums here. I love it.
Yeah. Well, man, that is too cool right there. Yeah. It's amazing how some of them, you said some of them can keep the same leaf size and then some of them shrink. And that's just neat. It's just, my mind is going 100 miles an hour trying to think how that happens and why that happens between different species.
It's probably a lot of trial and error and just experience, seeing what happens.
100%.
Yeah. Well, we can put that video up probably. If you don't mind, we'll put that video up on a.
Did you do a screen recording?
Yeah, I'm recording right now. So
sweet.
We can put that up when we announce the podcast. So
yeah,
that's
right on.
Yeah,
those trees are pretty cool. And man, Jake has a glade in his backyard. You can actually do a real bonsai.
That would be. I might could talk Alex into that. I think she would think that's pretty cool.
He actually has a glade that only exists two places in the world. It's newly discovered as of last year. It's a Hartzell sandstone glade. So And he built a house on top of it.
We bought a house that was already there. But
yeah. I'm like, I give him a hard time about it all the time. I'm like, man, you have exposed rock in your backyard. Like, it's just a glade waiting to be born. So that'd be cool to plant, like,
that would be really
bonsai
neat.
In your backyard. And bonsai actually in the ground. I guess, could you do that, or does it require you to manipulate roots as well?
It does require you to manipulate roots. You can create landscapes, you know, like I've got some trees out in my, you know, on my benches that have rock in them. And I've even got some maples with roots on top of rocks, some limestone that has some fissures, natural fissures in there. And I'm wrapping those roots into those fissures and then planting them. And then in the coming years, they will swell like roots do. And then they will naturally cling to the rocks, so I don't have to keep it bound. That will look like it's called root over rock. It's a tree clinging to a rock. You can replicate that in your backyard or onto a slab or
That would be really neat.
That'd be so cool. If you're ever down in Alabama, you need to come by and give Jake some pointers on how to do that. I'm always trying to get
him. I'll be
there
in 3 weeks. I'll be in Mentone and Fort Payne, but only for about 24 hours, and then I got to scoot to Dallas. I'll be coming back through there again. My mom's in Northeast Alabama.
Really?
And
what part?
She's in Mentone.
In Mentone.
Really?
And I've got family in Mentone, family in Fort Payne, family in Birmingham. You know, I got them all over.
Me too. I got family in all those towns too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
My mom's from Fort Payne, Rainsville, Geraldine, Fife, that area.
Yeah.
So that's where my mom's side's from is DeKalb County. So
that Mentone area is a real standout in our state. Yeah. It's so pretty over there. There's a lot of people, like Little River Canyon. A lot of people don't even know that exists, and until you get to see it. If you live in Alabama or the surrounding states and you've never been to Little River Canyon, you need to go check that out. It does not look like it should be where it is. It's just insane. But
don't go collecting bonsai trees from it.
Yeah, yeah. But there's probably
some great ones.
There's probably some pretty cool representations out there on those rock ledges. But
when's that? You said they have a rhododendron festival in Mentone. When is that?
It's in the springtime to late spring, I think, mid to late spring, just as they're blooming. So in the blooming, they have a festival up there.
I need to make a point to go to that next year. My family's always trying to get up to Mentone. We were there a couple weeks ago, actually. So, that's a super cool area. That little river canyon is something. Like, you're standing there and you're like, how is this in Alabama? It's absolutely incredible. And the rivers going through it is just... through these huge canyons, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite places to fly fish.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah,
but
it's got some great.
I spent all my summers in Mentone, Fort Payne, Rainsville as well.
Yeah,
depending on where they were, and then spent my Thanksgivings and Christmases between Mentone, Fort Payne, or Birmingham to visit family. So, I went to school in Alabama as well. I love Alabama. When people make Alabama the butt of their jokes. Like,
wait,
y'all don't even know what you're talking about.
We didn't know about that.
Wait, people make fun of Alabama.
No, honestly, we're joking.
You've also got NASA there. It's Alabama the Beautiful is absolutely beautiful if you know where to look. It really is.
Yeah, it really. Well, that's, I guess, what we do is show off all the cool things in Alabama pretty much. So.
There's a lot we don't show too, though.
It's everywhere. It's here in Virginia. Yeah. You know, Virginia's a gorgeous place. It's called, Virginia's for lovers. Well, there's a lot of haters here.
Well, I used to live, you know where Cumberland Gap is?
Yeah.
I used to live right there, Harrogate, Tennessee, Middlesboro, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And I went to wildlife or school for wildlife there for one semester, and that's where I failed botany. So, Virginia is awesome. We know a ton of great people from Virginia I know several foresters up that way who are managing for rough grouse and stuff like that, and it's a totally different world up there, and we need to get up that way sometime too.
Yeah, absolutely.
We say that about everywhere in the Southeast. There's so many great places down here.
Hopefully we'll make it to all of them eventually.
Yeah. But I'd like to encourage all our listeners to check out your Instagram and your YouTube. Do you want to plug those real quick?
Sure. They're both Appalachian Bonsai. I think Instagram is Appalachian_Bonsai, but both of them great platforms to learn about using your backyard trees for this art form. Yeah.
Well, man, I don't know. It's going to be hard for us to find a more interesting topic.
Yeah.
I hope
we
do, but that's just, when I saw your page, I was like, wow, that's going to make a great podcast. So.
Yeah, well, you kind of sprung it on me this morning. You had mentioned, like, in the last week or two, that we need to do this, and I was like, yeah, that sounds like an awesome idea. And this morning, he's like, hey, you think we could do this podcast? I was like, well, sure.
We're in the truck so much when we're around the house.
We might as well make use of the time, but it was time well spent. This is really interesting.
Absolutely, and thanks for coming on short notice, Ben, and hopefully everybody will check out your platforms and learn a little bit about bonsai. I know I learned a bunch today. That was
absolutely
extremely interesting and gives a whole new
whole new dimension, a whole new
for using our native species. Yeah, like it's something most people probably will never think about in their lifetime, and hopefully maybe it'll interest more people to try bonsai here in Appalachia.
So. I think I'm going to try it. I think we might have to get you to coach us along if you don't mind us bothering you. That really.
Let's go. Come on.
I wouldn't give Jake your number. He bothers me all the time with plant stuff. So.
Well, I'll speak to you through Kyle, I guess. But
no, you can. But anyways, well, we appreciate it, Ben, and thanks for coming on the podcast, and we'll see all y'all next week.